The comments contained in this podcast do not constitute legal advice. The opinions herein are the opinions of the speakers and not the official opinion of the Hodgson Russ Law Firm.
Hey there, tax fans. Welcome to State Tax Talks with me, your host, Joe Tantillo. I'm a tax attorney at the Hodgson Russ Law Firm looking to explore the nuances of state and local tax law. Here on the show, our goal is to keep tax informative, simple, and fun. So if you're ready to talk tax, turn up the volume and dive into this episode of State Tax Talks. We're on part three of our discussion with Joe Endres about sales tax in New York. Let's talk about what happens when Uncle Sam comes knocking at your door because they have taken the position that something you were selling was taxable and for whatever reason you weren't collecting and remitting the sales tax. First, from Johnny Taxpayer's perspective, I've got my little business. How likely is it that I am going to be the subject of a sales tax audit? I mean, do I need to panic here?
It's funny. So let me just give you some statistics and some things to think about with respect to that question. I often say, you know, when I'm presenting on sales tax that, you know, when you get that audit notice, you feel like the little guy. You feel kind of deflated, right? It's like, oh man, I got this sales tax audit. I'm going to have to deal with that. It's going to take a long time. The state, you know, they don't really seem to care about how long it takes or how many resources it takes for me to kind of comply and get all the documentation together. And you kind of feel deflated. And I've said that to people from the tax department, and they've said, Joe, what are you talking about? The taxpayer's not the little guy. We're the little guy. The auditor is the little guy.
What?
Yeah. And they said, well, think about this. Of all of the registered vendors in New York State, we're going to get to audit less than 5% of them. And that's of registered vendors. How many are not registered, but should be, but are selling something taxable? So that's a pretty low percentage right there. So it would seem from those statistics that it's unlikely that you're going to get audited, right? However, let me just put a big however there. New York State is at the forefront of finding people for audit. They now use technology in a way that is astounding. It's just remarkable. You know, so for example, they have sophisticated software that looks for anomalies with respect to a specific business. And by anomalies, I basically mean two numbers that don't make sense together. So at the most basic level, you know, they'll compare the sales that are listed on your sales tax returns compared to the sales listed on your income tax returns. If there's a big difference there, now look, those things shouldn't be the same. There are reasons why they wouldn't be, but they should be within a reasonable range of one another. And to the extent they're not, well, that raises a red flag that the software says, hey, wait a minute, there's a big discrepancy between sales. Let's take a look. Let's ask some more questions. And that's actually the most basic way that they do this. They now have information coming in from third parties that allow them to find and target audit businesses for audit. So for example, they have information coming in from financial institutions, banks, credit card companies. So they can do an analysis, internal analysis of how much cash is coming versus how much credit card transactions your business is doing. And if your ratio is unusual for a business in that industry, that's a potential audit. They'll say, hey, something unusual is going on there. There's an anomaly there. And they have information about a lot of businesses in the area, so they know that you're an outlier for your industry, for your area. Similarly, they have information from, you know, insurance companies, liquor distributors. And you might be sitting there thinking, well, so what? I don't represent any insurance companies, or I'm not an insurance company. I'm not a liquor distributor. I'm not involved in those industries. Well, no, but you might be involved with the restaurant down the street. You might be helping them with their taxes, or, you know, you might be the restaurant down the street worrying about your taxes. And suddenly, if you start submitting sales tax returns that say your sales are one number, but the tax department is getting an informational return from a liquor wholesaler saying you're buying a whole lot more than the sales you reported on your sales tax return, that's a problem. That doesn't make sense. Either that business isn't going to be around very long, or there's something funny going on there. Same thing with the insurance company, right? You may not represent or be an insurance company, but you might be an auto body shop, right? And suddenly, if you're reporting sales on your sales tax returns that are way lower than the proceeds that the insurance company is telling the tax department that they're paying to you, that's a problem, right? That's an automatic audit. So, you know, when you ask me how likely is it that you're going to be audited, I think overall the answer is small because of that 5% number. But if you're actually doing something wrong, whether purposefully or not, if you're getting it wrong, the state has so many techniques, so many tools in its toolbox to be able to find businesses that are doing it wrong, that from my perspective, it almost seems like, you know, it's not a matter of if, but a matter of when. You know, when are you going to get audited? And so it's important to just understand how what the state is looking at, and so that you can know what should I be looking at to make sure I'm getting everything right.
So I'm trying to do things right. Like, I think I'm doing things the right way, but now I'm nervous. My sales tax returns are out there. How long does the state have to use this sophisticated, overlapping system of information that's being reported to them to actually audit me?
Yeah, if you're filing returns, then there's a 3-year statute of limitations that apply, but that only applies if you're filing returns, right? So if you're a business that doesn't think that what they're selling is subject to sales tax and you're not filing sales tax returns, then there is no statute of limitations and the state can audit you at any time for any period. As a practical matter, in those situations, they typically, at least in New York, go back 6 years, but there's no requirement that they only go back 6 years. And so without the filing of the return, you know, it's an open-ended proposition. That's why in some circumstances, we recommend that businesses file zero returns, even if what you're selling isn't subject to tax, because at the very least, you have the comfort of knowing that the furthest that the tax department can go back is 3 years.
How will I actually know that I'm even being audited? Does someone show up at my business and like serve me?
No, usually not. I mean, typically you get a letter in the mail and, you know, you win the audit lottery by pulling a letter. And that's the most common way that audits begin. So there can be limited scope audits, but for the most part, for sales tax purposes, they follow a pretty common pattern where they look at the same types of issues and areas.
So now I've got an audit notice. I'm super stressed. What are my rights as a taxpayer before I cave and just send everything over? What do I need to know about, you know, kind of what I'm entitled to? Representation as a start?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, the business does not have to handle the sales tax audit by itself. You know, an accountant or, you know, certainly a tax professional, tax attorney can help you with respect to that process. They can even be the person out front. You know, many businesses often feel very nervous getting interviewed or getting audited by the state. And so they would rather have their representatives handle it and be out front. And that's perfectly fine. So you don't have to be the one that is handling the audit by yourself or even out front. You can have a representative kind of quarterback the process.
So now I'm under audit. I've got my tax professional who's representing me. What kind of documentation is going to be looked at by the state? What do I need to turn over?
So most sales tax audits look at four specific areas. The first is a tax reconciliation. If you're charging tax, then the auditors want to confirm that the amount of tax that you charged your customers equals the amount of tax that you paid over to the state. So it's just a reconciliation to make sure that those two numbers are the same. After you get over that hurdle, then auditors typically focus on three specific areas. The first are your capital purchases. These are the type of transactions that, you know, don't happen all the time. They're usually your big purchases that happen just once in a while. They're the purchases that, you know, usually show up on your depreciation schedule for federal income tax purposes. And so what an auditor is going to ask for is your federal income tax returns and the depreciation schedules there, because that kind of forms their universe for what to look at in terms of capital transactions, big purchases the business made. And so the auditors will ask for those income tax returns for all of the years under audit, right? So most sales tax audits go back 3 years if you're filing returns, maybe further if you're not, and they will get your federal income tax returns and the depreciation schedules for each of those years to kind of form the universe of the capital transactions they want to look at. And they'll look at them. They'll ask for the invoices related to those transactions to determine whether or not you properly paid tax as a purchaser on those transactions. Remember, a sales tax audit is not just what you sold, but it's also, did you pay tax properly on your purchases?
Wow. So now as Johnny Taxpayer, I'm super stressed about, did I pay sales tax? I wasn't even thinking about whether I'm collecting it, and now I got to think about paying it as well.
Sure, absolutely. And you know, what's funny is that it's one thing to have those big transactions that only happen, you know, every so often be part of the audit. And you know, that's tough enough. But then we get to the second area that the auditors are going to look at, and that is your expense purchases. So again, more purchases, but these are more the mundane day-to-day things, your supplies. Think pens, pencils, papers, you know, that type of stuff. So it's the supplies to run the business. The auditors are going to look at that. They probably, in this situation, won't want to look at every single item you've purchased, small item, supply item that you've purchased for the entire 3 years or the entire 6 years, right? That could be a pretty onerous task both for the auditor and the business. The business doesn't want to have to pull 3 years worth of these constant transactions, these smaller purchases. And so what the auditor and the business usually agree to do is come up with a test period. They'll look at a month or a quarter or a year, depending on the number of transactions. And they'll say, look, we'll just look at in detail at this set period, this month or this quarter. And we'll find a liability in there. And if we find a liability, what we're going to do is project that liability to the rest of the audit period. That saves both the auditor and the business from having to pull invoices for every transaction. Now, that's a pretty good deal. I mean, nobody wants that extra work, but it does come with a little bit of I don't want to say risk, but you know, of concern that you get that projection right? Because if the projection is off, then that's going to create a liability that isn't representative for the rest of the audit period. So you have to make sure that that projection is valid. And then the final area that an auditor is going to look at, again, is sales. And you know, this assumes that what you're selling is taxable. So if we come to the conclusion that what you're selling is taxable, then the auditor is going to want to take a look at those sales. They're probably not going to want to look at every single sale you made. It's similar to the expense purchases. There will probably be too many transactions to look at everything in detail. So they'll do another month or quarter test for the sales, determine if there's any liability in that test period, and then project it to the rest of the sales tax period.
But Joe, what if we're stuck on this issue of taxability? I am confident that my sales are not taxable and I'm getting audited now. And you know, maybe I asked my accountant or some other tax professional before this all kicked off. You know, I tried to be good about my planning and I think I have a good position. How do I prove it? How do I fight that fight?
Yeah, I mean, you try to convince the auditor, right? In other words, you put together your position, you marshal the authority that supports your position, other cases, the law, the regulations, and you try to convince the auditor that you're correct. The auditor, in consultation with, you know, their whole team, you know, it's not just one auditor that makes the decision. The auditor is going to take your submission and go back to discuss it with not only the audit team, but maybe even the folks that kind of determine audit policy back in Albany, you know, that the head of audit, you know, it's called field audit management. And they'll consider your position and they'll come back to you. Now, you may ultimately disagree, right? An auditor might say, we hear what you said and we're coming back and we think it's taxable. And you'll say, well, I disagree. And in those situations, what normally happens is the audit continues. The auditors continue with the audit under the conclusion or the assumption that the transactions are subject to sales tax. They complete the audit, come up with a liability number, and they'll issue an assessment. You know, obviously you disagree with it. You may partially agree and partially disagree, right? You may agree that you owe some tax on your purchases, but disagree with respect to the liability of the sales. And in that instance, you can pay the part of the liability that you agree with and protest the part of the liability that you disagree with. So you're not stuck with the auditor's kind of conclusions. You can then further protest that assessment.
Now you say protest. What does that mean? Do I get to go, you know, have my day in court in front of a jury of my peers? I think I made the same joke in the last episode.
not so much a jury of your peers, but you can certainly appeal the liability, right? And you've got a couple options here. You can take a less formal approach and go to mediation. It's called the Bureau of Conciliation and Mediation Services, BCMS is what we refer to it as. And again, this is all New York specific, but you can choose to go to mediation or you can choose to go to what's called the Division of Tax Appeals, which is a more formal appeal approach. There, you are going before an administrative law judge. You're no longer working with the auditors. You know, in the mediation, you'd be working across the table from the auditors with a mediator there. If you take the Division of Tax Appeals approach, you're now working with an administrative law judge and the lawyers for the tax department. And look, they're not mutually exclusive. You can go through mediation, try to convince the mediator of your position. You may not be successful. The mediator might say, no, we think the auditors are right here. At that point, you can then go to the Division of Tax Appeals for the more formal process. So, you know, you can't have two bites at the apple there, so to speak. And there are all sorts of different considerations, strategic considerations as to which approach is best. It depends on the issues, the timing. It can depend on a whole bunch of things. But you do have those options to appeal. And look, the appeal can go even further, too. I mean, we can keep going here. If you don't like the administrative law judge's determination, you can protest that further to what's called the Tax Appeals Tribunal. That's kind of the court of last resort within the tax department. And if you don't like the Tax Appeals Tribunal determination, you can then appeal that further and get into actual state court. You know, the appeals from the Tax Appeals Tribunal go directly to the Third Department, the Appellate Division in New York. And so you can get your day in actual court, although, you know, not a jury of your peers. It's decided by judges.
Can we take it all the way to the Supreme Court like Wayfair?
You can. I mean, theoretically, yes. One of our partners, Tim Noonan, went all the way to the Court of Appeals, the highest court within New York. Now, he won there, so he didn't have to go to the Supreme Court, but you can certainly take it up the ladder. I'm sure Tim mentioned that when you will mention that if you haven't yet when you talk to him.
Now, let's talk about, you know, the unfortunate outcome of if you lose. What happens now? Am I going to jail?
You know, no, you're not. I mean, this is a civil assessment. So in this situation, it's a bill that comes due. There can be situations where it's not civil, right? If during a sales tax audit, you know, you knew enough to collect the tax on your taxable transaction, but you end up pocketing that cash, you know, you didn't know enough to remit it to the state. Well, those are the type of facts where we might not be talking about a civil liability anymore. A sales tax auditor can refer a case to their criminal investigations division for a criminal investigation. So, you know, with a normal sales tax audit, if we're not going down that criminal road, then what you're dealing with is a civil assessment, a civil liability, a bill, and you have some options with dealing with that. You know, you don't have to just suddenly come up with the money to pay the bill in full. The tax department will work with you with respect to, you know, putting together a payment program so that you can pay it over time. So you're not necessarily obligated to pay it all right at one time.
What about interest and penalties? Is that something that I need to have in the back of my mind?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, for penalties, again, sales tax is a very difficult tax to know. And as we've seen, the determination on taxability can change with the slightest factual distinction. So for most businesses, penalties are not imposed, at least for initial audit, a first audit. But if it's a second audit, then, you know, penalties are certainly potentially in play because, you know, the auditors could take the position that you should have known better. You know, we've been in here before. So penalties usually not on the first audit, possibly on follow-up audits. Interest will always be on the table. Interest is statutorily required. And so if you get hit with a tax liability, there's going to be interest on it. And, you know, the interest can be significant. I mean, the interest, you know, can vary, but it's usually somewhere around these days, you know, 7.5%, et cetera. But if you have penalties on a sales tax assessment, that interest rate jumps from, you know, around 7% all the way up to 14.5%. So the interest rate can double. And in sales tax, again, you know, the interest and the penalties can oftentimes outweigh the tax, especially if we're going back a number of years. So it can be a huge liability. And in the back of all of this is what we've already talked about, the fact that this could all be a personal assessment against those responsible for running the business. So again, high stakes. It's not no laughing matter.
No doubt. This is a situation that taxpayers and business owners, in particular small business owners, really do not want to find themselves in. So, Joe, how do those business owners, those taxpayers, plan to avoid this kind of audit disaster?
Well, I mean, look, it is always best to do things before the audit starts, right? It's always best to have a clear understanding of your obligations, or as clear as possible, because look, there are some transactions we could talk about where I could tell you I'm not sure what the answer is. and so have as clear a understanding of your obligations under the sales tax law before the audit happens. If you're in a situation where, you know, you have a disagreement with the auditors, then you just have to simply, you know, marshal the facts, marshal the rules in the best way you can to support your position and, you know, fight that assessment.
Indeed, this is an area of the law that is nuanced. It overlaps with other areas. It is complex. And I think that business owners can, in general, benefit from planning and consultation with a tax professional so that they don't have a situation where they end up in a deep years-long audit.
And let me add one other thing with respect to, you know, making an audit better. You know, it's one thing to fight an audit when you have perfect information, perfect records. In those situations, the fight is much easier, at least, you know, because you're not fighting with ambiguity. You're not fighting with uncertainty. But what about situations where you just don't have records? You know, there are many businesses out there that just didn't maintain their purchase records or didn't maintain their sales records going all the way back. And in those situations, this is another reason why sales tax is one of the scariest taxes, is because auditors can estimate. Look, an auditor has to do an audit, and if you don't have records on which to audit, they're going to come up with some way to come up with a liability. And they can use external indices, is what we call them. You know, they'll use something outside the business in order to approximate the business's sales to come up with a liability. So the one of the most important things you can do to have a smoother sales tax audit experience is to have adequate records, have good records, so that you are limiting the auditor's ability to come up with a way to determine the liability. You know, if you have the records, they have to base the liability on those records. If you don't have the records, then they can come up with a whole host of estimates to determine the liability. And look, I have yet to see one of these estimates come in lower than what the taxpayer actually reported. I'm waiting for it. I mean, it should happen. it's never happened.
Well, you heard it here, folks. Keep great records and have a plan. Do your due diligence. If you're thinking about getting into the world of business, if you are a young entrepreneur, if you are a long-established entrepreneur or corporation, there are steps you can take to put yourself in a better position to protect yourself in these sorts of sales tax compliance rules, world, etc. Joe, thank you for joining us today. This was a fantastic discussion. I think the folks at home learned a lot about the world of sales tax, and we appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. Had a great time.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of State Tax Talks. If you're interested in listening to more episodes, we're available on all platforms where podcasts can be found, including YouTube. If you enjoyed this episode of State Tax Talks with Joe Tantillo, please give us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform. And if you're in need of a tax professional, you can contact the tax attorneys at Hodgson Russ. Go to www.hodgsonruss.com for more information. And until next time, I'm Joe Tantillo, and this is State Tax Talks. Catch you later, tax fans.
The comments contained in this podcast do not constitute legal advice. The opinions herein are the opinions of the speakers and not the official opinion of the Hodgson Russ Law Firm.